won't say I love you, babe. Won't say I need you, babe. But I'm gonna get you, babe, and I will not do you wrong. Living's mostly wasting time. I'll waste my share of mine. But it never feels too good, so let's don't take too long. For you're soft as glass, and I'm a gentleman. We got the sky to talk about and the world to lie. Days up and down they come, like rain on a cumbia drum. Forget most, remember some, all but don't turn none away. Everything is not enough, nothing is too much to bear. Where you've been is good and gone, all you keep is the getting there. But to live's to fly, all low and high, so shake the dust off of your wings.
Forbes Avenue is a production of WRCT Pittsburgh. The opinions expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of WRCT, its members, or Carnegie Mellon University. Email questions or comments to pa@wrct.org.
I'm Richard Gordon. Thank you so much for joining us here on Forbes Avenue on WRCT Pittsburgh. Today we have a conversation I recorded on September 15th of 2024 with musician Heather Pearson. I think you'll enjoy meeting her and hearing her music, but her comments about the music industry today should be particularly enlightening.
Started out just like anything should. By the time I got here, I was feeling no good at all. I should be having a ball. Sometimes you don't get to choose. I got them low down, dusty house blues. There's dust on the ceiling and dust on the floor. Dust in my eyes.
Just heard Heather Pearson's Dusty House Blues off of her 2024 record, Back to the Light. thank you so much for meeting me here in Steubenville, Ohio, even though you're from Conway, New Hampshire.
Yes, I'm happy to be here.
Do you tour all over the U.S., or is it mostly all over the eastern U.S., or what do you do?
All over the U.S.
How is this new record, Back to the Light, doing?
So far, so good. I'm really excited about this one. This was a group of songs that most of them were written, you know, during these last four wild years that we've all been living through. The trio, Sean and Craig and I, went into the studio in Portland, Maine, at the summer of 2023 to record these songs. And my goal was for the three of us to record everything live on the floor, or everything that we could record live on the floor. Meaning there are a couple of little overdubs. I couldn't play the piano and the B3 at the same time. So I did a couple of overdubs with B3, and there were some overdubs with harmony vocals. But other than that, everything was recorded live, you know, single takes, no, you know, wizardry or editing or anything like that.
Why do you like that approach?
I really like recording live as much as possible, because it really captures something that you... There's this X factor. There's this just something, especially with this, with Back to the Light. When I listen to it now on headphones, I can just remember what it was like being in that room. You can hear the walls. You can hear us breathing sometimes. You can hear that we're all in this space, you know, trying, you know, as my friend Kate Munger says, you know, striving for approximations. You know, we had the ideas of these songs, and we just went in, you know, well rehearsed, and just said, we're going to just record these songs, see where they go, see where they take us. And then I made the decision to just shelve the whole thing for better part of a year. I wanted to kind of forget how they sounded. I wanted to just come back to the takes with fresh ears. And once I realized that we had really captured something special, I was like, okay, we've got the next record in the can.
That track you just played, you could have been describing my house with the Dusty House Blues. I mean...
Yes. Yeah, it's a song that I wrote a couple of summers ago when Sean and I were in New Orleans. We go to New Orleans every year. There's a traditional jazz camp that we both work and teach at. 2 years ago, we were in town for the jazz camp, and we arrived a week early, and we spent a couple of nights at a house right in the French Quarter on Dauphine Street. And it literally... The lyric does not lie. There really was dust on the ceiling.
You said Sean. You mean Sean Nadeau.
Yes, Sean Nadeau playing the bass. Yes. Yeah.
You've now put out 16 records.
Yeah.
And I feel like your music has evolved.
I often joke that I'm just a kid that couldn't decide what she wanted to be when she grew up. So I...
Have you grown up?
Oh, no. Why would I do that? But yeah, I would definitely agree that my music has, and songwriting has evolved. And especially as, you know, the city of New Orleans just keeps weighing more and more heavily on, you know, the things that I create. There's something about having the seed of an idea, the seed of a song, and then with improvisation and with the sort of the infrastructure of jazz, if you will, just finding out what can happen in that space.
I feel like you start off as a sort of a folk singer, and now I hear some stride piano influences in there. I hear some Moes Allison influences in there. It's like, yeah, this is a totally different kind of music than, you know, your records in the early 2010s.
Yeah. Well, the pandemic changed all of us, right? And so Sean and I were home a lot, practicing a lot. I was playing a lot more piano and really getting back to a lot of the sounds I was hearing as a kid. My dad, he didn't play music professionally. He had terrible stage fright, but he was a very gifted musical person, and he loved his clarinet. He loved his Pete Fountain records and his Woody Herman records. And my bedroom in the house I grew up in was right above the living room that had the good stereo, the good record player. And so I very often fell asleep to my dad noodling along on his Selmer, playing along with his Woody Herman and Pete Fountain records. And I would just hear this sound coming up through the floorboards. And it's funny, I didn't really truly and totally appreciate that influence until I was much older. When I was a kid, I was just like, oh, dad's listening to his jazz records, you know. And I enjoyed the sounds, and I still do, but I didn't fully appreciate what a lasting impact those formative moments had on me until... During the pandemic, I had a lot of time, as we all did, to really slow down and pay attention to our moment-to-moment experience, to memories, good and bad. And I really just steered into the New Orleans early jazz sound, which I've been falling in love with more and more every year of my life that I go and work and teach in New Orleans and play in New Orleans. But I, having that precious time that was so precious and also very difficult in so many ways, for me personally, it was a real gift to be able to just sit still for that long and really kind of dig into the creative aspect of, you know, of life. So
with your 2024 record Back to the Light, there's a noticeable change in your trio and that Davey Sturdivant is now retired.
He's retired from the road. He's not doing the long haul touring. We still play together, yeah. You know, yeah. Up in Maine and New Hampshire and northern New England where we are. But the trio now has Craig Bryan on drums and harmony vocals. He is just a wonderful musician and wonderful friend. And he was part of the trio that was doing the Charlie Brown Christmas concerts. And we're right. still doing those every yeah. year. And then when in that time when Davey was, you know, moving on from touring and you know, we just decided, hey, Craig, what do you think about, you know, playing more of my originals? And he just fell right in. And that really kind of, for me, solidified this new sound. It's sort of an old sound is new again, kind of. Like you said, Mose Allison, right. like all of those.
It's like like a classic jazz trio.
Yeah.
With piano and bass and drums.
Yes, in a room together.
Right.
Yeah. That. Right. And so I really wanted to capture that, and I think we've done that.
Yeah. We're chatting with Heather Pearson, and we're talking about her 2024 record, Back to the Light. Let's let the folks hear the title track from this. Tell us about the song, Back to the Light.
Back to the Light is a song that, it was one of those songs that felt like a lightning strike one afternoon. You know, just, sometimes I've got many, many notebooks full of songs that I've started and never finished, started and finished and they're terrible, started and finished and they're pretty good. And this was one that just hit me in like an afternoon, like the whole thing start to finish. And I sometimes have described this as a song that sort of, I tried to capture everything that I feel when I listen to a band like the Wood Brothers, which is a band right. I really love. And there's some feeling I get when I listen to them. And I was trying to capture that feeling with this song.
Everybody's trying to be free from the ghosts that haunt them at night. At the same time, nobody wants to admit to their fright. There's all kinds of monsters hiding under the bed, and all kinds of demons living in our heads.
find their part in the same old song. Everybody's so afraid to admit when they're wrong. Yeah, everybody's stumbling in the dark. Everybody's hoping to leave their mark. Yeah, everybody's looking to a brand new day when all is forgiven and we found our way to get on back.
Chatting with Heather Pearson, and you just heard Back to the Light from her 2024 record of the same name. And we've got up to you in Steubenville, Ohio, and I want to mention just it's how hard you have to work to make a living at this.
Yeah, I often joke that there are tens of dollars to be made playing music for a living.
It's a totally different sense of the music industry from your point of view as an independent artist, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, things are changing so rapidly, and because our technology is evolving, you know, much more rapidly than we are as humans, it's really hard to keep up. And the way that people even enjoy and listen to and even consume music has changed so much. Everything is so readily available online. You know, just a couple of clicks and you can find, you know, everybody's discography, just boom, right there. Which I think is wonderful in some ways, and the technology, of course, like everybody has a recording studio in their pocket or on their laptop, so that's lowered the bar of entry, which is wonderful, and that just means there's a whole lot more, you know, noise to kind of get your voice heard above. Not that it's all noise, there's a lot of wonderful music out there. There's lots of wonderful music in the world, and yes, the way people are consuming it and enjoying it and supporting it is changing. You kind of have to be, as an independent, you know, full-time music maker, you have to really pay attention to those trends and also figure out for yourself, you know, what sacrifices am I willing to make, you know, in the way I live my life, you know, living very frugally and making certain choices. And at least that's what it's been for me.
Yeah. I think back to when I was young, I'm about 30 years older than Heather. You know, it used to be that back in the dinosaur days, bands would tour to support the sale of their LPs.
Right.
And now it's flipped, hasn't it?
Kind of. I mean, there is still some of that, but then it's... I remember hearing a joke about the Rolling Stones are really just a very complicated T-shirt selling company. I can't remember where I heard that, but the merchandising, like that, that's... Like a lot of concerts I go to by some of my favorite bands, you might see LPs. You don't see CDs as much as you used to, but you see a lot of T-shirts and sweatshirts and hoodies and, you know, napkin holders and all of the things.
But the LPs are now marketed as luxury items.
Yeah, there is, like I say, there is a real sea change that's happening, and I think we're still in it. You know, it's just it's evolving all the time, and it's easy to get caught up in the cycle of that and start to worry, and the idea of, you know, comparison being the thief of joy, like, oh, well, that person is doing XYZ, I should do XYZ. But for me, it's really about coming back to, you know, what do I believe? How do my actions support my beliefs? How can I maintain my integrity as I, you know, want it to be? And how do I want to be seen and all of that? It's, I don't know. Maybe I'm getting a little too deep for this, but it's a deep topic. There's a lot to it. There's a lot of layers.
You know, you look back to the 1970s, you have bands like Big Star that the critics loved, but the record never went into distribution.
Yeah.
And they sort of were gone.
Yeah.
And I think that's one big change in the industry, is that the as you said, the barriers to entry to making a record are so much lower.
Mm-hmm.
How does that affect you? How does that affect the marketplace in general?
Well, it just means there's a lot more, as much as I don't like this word in the context of music and art, there's a lot more competition. You know, there's so many more of us that are all vying for the same, you know, bookings or festivals or, you know, listening room gigs or radio interviews or press or whatever. There's so many more voices that are, you know, saying, hey, look at me, look what I'm doing. And, you know, everybody wants that. Everybody wants to be heard and to be seen and to be appreciated. So, yeah, there's just a lot more competition. And because I'm not a very competitive person by nature, you know, maybe some opportunities whiz right by me that, you know, that another person might think those are the ones you should be going after. But I my philosophy from the beginning of doing this full time, especially, is to go where I'm invited, you know, because I want to honor that. If somebody really want, like, you know, house concerts, for instance, if somebody really wants me to come to their home and play in their backyard or in their living room or whatever, I want to try to make that happen and honor that request.
There's a difference in the way Heather Pearson is talking about music than the way a music mogul would. And that you're talking about the music, you're not talking about the bottom line.
Right.
And how many tens of thousands of dollars can we get if we add this blonde-haired bass player?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, and that's an approach, right? That is a, you know, depending on the context, that can be a formula for quote-unquote success. And, you know, I wish you all the best. I don't know, maybe I have a different definition of success. I mean, I've been doing music, nothing but music, full-time for 15 years, and that's a success story.
It is. It really is. I mean, but the focus is on the music,
yes,
not the business.
And business is important. It's important to surround yourself with people who can help you. You
right.
know, I have a booking agent, and I have a person who does tour publicity for me, and I have a person who's doing radio and press and all of that. And it's really about surrounding yourself with people who really believe in you. You can hire mercenaries. I don't like to hire mercenaries. I like to hire people who really believe in what I'm doing and are already fans of what I'm doing, and that's the right approach for me. It's not the right approach
for everybody.
Right, for
everybody. Right.
Yeah. And also, I love to share it with people. I love to connect with like-minded folks. And to me, and especially with everything that's, you know, happening politically in this country, I just think that the idea of bringing people together around the ember of live music, around this, I really think we need to listen to each other more. At its best, music connects us and unites us, even if we don't agree. I forget who said, you know, we don't have to think alike to love alike. And to me, that is one of the guiding principles of my whole life, is just that we don't have to agree on everything. We don't have to agree on anything at all. And music, I think, is something that touches everybody in a way that sort of transcends all these other bright lines that we keep drawing around one another.
One of the coolest things that you do, Heather Pearson, is you share a lot of your jazz improvisations, a lot of your improvisational music with people online, either with Facebook concerts or from your website.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. I have this, it's called Heather's Piano Piece, P-E-A-C-E, and I've been doing it for several years now. Every 3 days, there's a brand new, totally improvised piece of instrumental piano music that I make available on my website. You can just download them for free and listen to them. Yeah.
Of course, Heather will accept your donation if you want to listen to them, but you've not overtly monetized the project.
No, I haven't. No, it's really important to me to, because piano is where I started musically, and it's where I feel the most comfortable, I would say. Although, I do love to sing, too.
But
the piano, I feel like I can say everything that I want to say musically without having to put any kind of lyrical content to it. It's really a place where I can just freely express everything that I've been sort of rambling about.
Something that you said, Heather, made me suddenly think about Marion McPartland, the mm-hmm. late, great jazz pianist.
Oh, yeah.
And her radio show was a long-time staple all over public radio, where she'd have different musicians in, and they'd talk with each other, share ideas, and then improvise with each other.
Yeah.
You really enjoy just even watching you and Sean today. And, you know, the two of you are having fun improvising with each other up there on stage.
Yes.
I mean, that's what it's about for you.
Yeah, it's a conversation. Music is a conversation. And it's a language, and there are many dialects to that language. And I just keep, you know, trying to pick up the ones that feel the most comfortable in my skin and trying them out.
One of the records that you put out recently that I really, really enjoyed was Heart Songs and Circle Songs. You collaborated with?
My friend Bernice Martin. She's been a dear friend for about 20 years. For a number of years, I was a music director at a very small Unitarian Universalist church in Western Maine. And Bernice was a member of the congregation who had this beautiful voice. I could just hear this beautiful, deep, resonant voice coming from the back pew every Sunday. And I discovered that she is a gifted songwriter in her own right. And so in 2018 or 2017, we started collaborating on this project that we call Heart Songs and Circle Songs. And in 2018, we released the first of two so far full-length recordings of these songs that we call them songs for community singing. And really what they are singing as a spiritual practice without any, there's no dogma, there's none of that. It's just singing for the sake of singing. And we've been traveling, Bernice and I, all over the country, bringing community singing to lots of different places, to churches, to weekend-long events, to retreats. And it's been such a gratifying other facet to what I offer.
Well, listeners, if you couldn't tell, the last track you're going to hear is a collaboration between Bernice Martin and Heather Pearson. Now, Bernice actually wrote the song, right?
She did, yeah. It was actually written, listeners are probably aware of the Peace Pole Project, mm-hmm. and there was one installed at First Universalist of Norway, Maine, which is that small church that I was the music director for a number of years. When that Peace Pole was installed, Bernice wrote this song. I took it, harmonized it. We brought a whole bunch of our friends and fellow choir members into the studio to record a whole bunch of songs, including this version of May Peace Prevail.
Thank you so much, Heather, for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you. This has been a pleasure.
May peace prevail upon earth. May peace prevail upon earth. Prevail upon earth. May peace prevail upon earth. May peace prevail upon earth. May peace prevail. May peace prevail. May peace prevail upon earth. May peace prevail upon earth. May peace prevail upon earth. May peace prevail. May peace prevail. May peace prevail upon earth. May peace prevail. Peace prevail upon earth.
Avenue is a production of WRCT Pittsburgh. The opinions expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of WRCT, its members, or Carnegie Mellon University. Email questions or comments to pa@wrct.org.
You are listening to The Sound of Language on WRCT Pittsburgh, produced by the students in Contextual Practice Seminar. The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in the show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily express those of WRCT Pittsburgh or its members.
Hello, this is Ashley Ross, and welcome to the latest episode of Sound is Not a Language. For this recording on January 31st, I'm coming to you from the opening of a solo exhibition, Chinwaza Rebehavior, by none other than our very own MFA cohort, Annie Chen. Before I get to the sounds of the opening reception, let's first talk about the charcuterie board. A lot of galleries and institutions don't understand that sometimes an opening reception is made by how good the food and drinks are. I'm being dead serious. And as a grad student, especially an art grad student, this is basically dinner. So I appreciated the attention to detail with the delicious selection of fruits, which included pineapples, melons, grapes, and strawberries. The meats and cheeses were of great quality as well. But let's talk about the most important part of the show, which is Annie's show. You can tell from how intricate some of the pieces are that there is an incredible amount of thought and research and investigation that goes into her practice and specifically the pieces. Also, experiencing her work outside of CMU has me appreciating her approach to her art practice even more. I love how, although her work considers colonization and migration through various methods of travel and experience, she's also considering and challenging the viewer to consider context and the environment. Her work never feels like she just slaps something together and calls it a day. She's constantly questioning, learning, and experimenting. And she takes the time to really understand what she's working with, and it shows. And so I'm super excited that we all got to go and experience Annie's show in person and have a good time and support, you know, building careers specifically within an MFA program. And it's exciting to see that somebody already has a solo show in the first year. So enjoy the sounds of an opening reception. I got to interview a few people. Enjoy. Congrats, Annie. How do you feel? It looks beautiful.
Thank you very much. So this is the one you made.
Thank you. branch of the art
teaching? Yeah, I'm in Annie's cohort.
Okay.
Yeah, we're both in the same MFA program.
Oh, great. Yeah. Are you also in the first year of your MFA? Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have any kind of concentration on?
Yeah, I'm mostly photography.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you move to Pittsburgh for the program, or were you okay? Where from?
California.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, the Carnegie is a good program, right?
It's pretty good. It's enjoyable. It's been an interesting first year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's great. And what's your name?
I'm Ashley.
Ashley?
Yeah.
I'm Josiah. I teach here at Seton Hill. I teach painting and drawing.
Oh, awesome. Nice to meet you.
Yeah, nice to meet you too. And thank you for coming and,
supporting
your friend. And that's great.
Yeah, she's awesome. And I'm excited to see. I haven't seen this work from her before. Like, I see mostly her sculptural things. So seeing these larger installations are really beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really excited. Support her.
They look great in this space.
Yeah, this is like a good gallery space. It looks really nice. So.
Yes, we have two. This is the small one, and then the bigger one, the Harlem Gallery, just right there. And right now we have a student show.
Okay.
But it's a great gallery. We have these movable works, like this work here.
Mm-hmm.
Readjust the gallery space. And I love that we have that flexibility in the space. It's a great, great place to show.
Yeah, it looks great. Yeah.
Experience.
What are you experiencing right now?
I feel a little damp.
Oh, yeah.
I did look at myself in the mirror and I thought, wet rat. But I'm looking at a fabric piece that's approximately probably 15 feet long by 5, I would say. There's a ladder made out of soft sculpture fabric that protrudes down. There's a lot of objects remade as in soft sculpture and fabrics, different patterns. Some things are coming off the wall. There's a really beautiful spider web made out of chain. And there's some plasticky fabric that's making up a plant. It's nice.
I think I'm really enjoying seeing these very large installation pieces that I haven't seen yet from Annie's work.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like we're used to seeing some of like the sculptural pieces that she's been working on, but these are so like huge and like magnificent.
Mm-hmm.
I've always been appreciative of like her ability to like use different textures and patterns, and but yeah, it feels so very cohesive. So I'm super happy for her and proud of her.
Yeah.
You know, and how it feels in this space too. Like, this is feels like a really great space to have her work live in as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
It has room to breathe.
Yeah, room to breathe. We also were going to get you flowers, Annie.
Yes, we promise.
We promise we will get you flowers. What's your perspective on navigating an MFA program, but then also trying to build connections within the program? Like, Annie has a solo show. Do you think it's a good idea to, like, pursue building a career or, like, within the program, or just focus on making work?
I think you should only make work.
Okay.
But that's just me. I don't know, I just really valued all like the facilities and space and like the little built-in community of the program, and didn't do very much effort into leaving the building,
mm-hmm.
but also like the second half of the program was all like during COVID when I was there. Was not a community. Which was great.
When did I graduate?
2021.
Oh, wow.
Yep. So I don't know. I don't want to like prescribe what everybody should do, but for me, I was very happy to just show up and have it be a time to focus.
Just focus.
On
okay.
myself.
How do you think Annie's doing so far?
She's doing wonderful.
Yeah. Annie is amazing. We love you, Annie. Congrats.
Hi, my name is Penn Schenkweiler, and I'm 9 years old.
And I am Morgan Thomas Schenkweiler, and this is my interview of one of my twin daughters, Penn. Okay, Penn.
Where do you live?
I live in Pittsburgh.
How do you like Pittsburgh?
It's fine.
Our family moved to Pittsburgh in August so that I could go to grad school at CMU.
What do you like about it?
I like that it's big.
Okay. In what way?
In what way that there are things that I get to explore.
That there's always sort of new things that you haven't seen before? Nice.
I like the parks.
What do you like about the parks?
I like that they're big and have a lot of trees and nature.
I agree.
This radio program is called Is Sound a Language? And is part of the contextual practice component of the MFA program.
I want to ask you about sound. What is your relationship to sound?
Good.
You have a good relationship to sound? Yeah. Do you like sounds?
Sometimes.
Okay. So what kind of sounds do you like?
I like nature sounds.
Like what?
Like the wind and the stream rushing and the leaves flapping against each other and the birds chirping.
Nice. What kind of sounds do you not like?
Car sounds, noisy yelling people sounds, people crunching sounds.
Like you don't like the sound of people eating?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a name for that.
What is it?
I don't remember what it is.
It's misophonia.
And I think I have that too, and I think your grandfather has that too. He hates the sound of people chewing. Especially with their mouth open. You don't like that sound either.
Yeah, I don't like that sound.
Do you like crunching food? Are you bothered by the sound of your own crunching noises in your own mouth?
No.
Me neither. I prefer crunchy foods. What is your first memory of sound?
What do you mean?
I mean, if you can think back to when you were really little, do you remember any sounds specifically?
Yeah.
Like what?
Me and my sister fighting.
Really?
Yeah.
That's the sound you remember?
Yeah.
Huh. What did that sound like?
Yeah! But I also remember the wind.
The sound of the wind.
And the rain.
What other sounds do you remember from when you were little?
Dogs.
The sounds of dogs barking.
And lawnmowers.
And leaf blowers. Those are not my favorite sounds.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember any music?
Our family is particularly musical. My father is a cellist and a violin maker, and my husband is a professional singer and conductor. One of my first memories of music is waking up in the morning and hearing my dad playing the cello. All children in our family have always been required to play some sort of musical instrument.
Do you remember any music, or do you not think of music as sound?
I do and I don't. I think it as sound because you can hear it, but I also don't because I enjoy nature more.
So you actually really like there to be a lot of quiet. Have you ever heard total silence?
Yes, kind of.
Where?
In my room.
At night?
Yeah, and also just if I'm sitting there in the morning and it's really quiet in the house.
Do you like that?
Yes, I really like it.
What is your relationship with music now?
I like it, and I also don't like it.
What do you like about it?
I like that it's calming if you're playing it beautifully.
Do you play an instrument?
Yes.
What instrument do you play?
Cello and piano.
Yeah. What don't you like about it?
That it doesn't always sound calm and beautiful.
You said that there are some sounds that you really don't like, and you said what? Chewing? Is one. What else?
Cars.
Oh, that's right, cars.
And just the sound of people screaming and making noises and stuff.
When you hear, like, lots of people in a room and they're loud, how does it make you feel?
Overwhelmed.
Yeah. Do you feel like that ever when you're out in nature?
No.
Have you ever been in nature, listening to nature sounds that got really loud?
Yes, but I actually don't mind those nature sounds. I don't mind loud sounds that come from nature.
You said that you don't really like loud noises, but are you a loud person or a quiet person, or both?
Both. I'm a loud person because that's how my dad is, and when I'm happy, I'm loud. Sometimes when I'm sad, I'm loud, but I'm quiet because, I don't know, I just enjoy quietness, and sometimes I just am a quiet person.
Does it help you to focus when you're quiet?
Yes.
Does it help you to calm down if you're in a quiet space?
Yes.
Have you ever listened to the radio?
Yes.
What do you listen to on the radio?
Music. Or if there are weird people talking, the weird people talking.
Weird people talking?
Here, I'm pretty sure she is talking about NPR.
Isn't it funny that now you're a weird person that's going to be talking on the radio?
Yes, but I'm already a weird person.
Speaking of this weird person, Penn had one desire and one desire only for what to talk about on her radio interview.
What do you want to teach me about today or tell me about in this interview?
I want to tell you about armadillos.
Okay, tell me about armadillos.
They're my favorite animal.
Why are they your favorite animal? What do you like about an armadillo?
I like that most people don't have them as their favorite animals. They're kind of another animal that, like, people kind of forget about, and I think they're really cute. I like that they have short, stubby legs, and they kind of are like knights in armor.
That's cool. It is cool that they have their own armor.
If I had an armadillo, I would name it Barney.
Barney?
Yeah.
Barney the armadillo. Okay, so what else do you know about armadillos?
There's only one kind lives in North America. It is the nine-banded armadillo.
Nine-banded? Does that mean it has stripes?
Like the nine bands on the back.
Yeah.
That's what it means.
Got it.
There are 21 kinds of armadillos in all. They live in burrows. They eat insects. Spiders and scorpions, they can smell termites inside a mound. And they use their sticky tongues to grab the food.
That's really cool. I didn't realize they have sticky tongues.
But they use their claws to dig for food.
So they dig, and then they stick their sticky tongues down and grab the bugs?
Mm-hmm. They cannot see well, but their sense of smell is strong.
They don't have good sight, but they have really good smelling and hearing.
They can see things, but it's not.
It's not their best sense.
Mm-hmm.
So in some ways, they're different than us.
Yes.
In that way. Do you think it's quiet underground?
I think it might be quiet because it's, like, underground and, like, there's nothing there. But I think it might be loud because all the bugs are in there.
it's really cool for me to think about what an area that we aren't in might sound like.
Yeah, well, some armadillos make loud squealing sounds.
Loud squealing sounds? When do they make that sound? Do they? Can armadillos talk to each other? Do armadillos have radio stations?
No!
Do they make radio programs for other armadillos?
No.
If you had an armadillo right now, right here, named Barney, what do you think that armadillo would want to say on the radio?
I'm hungry. Or I'm tired.
Why do you think that?
It's the daytime right now and they're nocturnal, so...
Oh, yeah. They'd probably want to be sleeping, huh?
And also, armadillos are shy animals. People try to study them in the wild. In Texas, you can see many places.
Did you know that the word armadillo is Spanish for little armored one? Armadillo.
An armadillo has a carapace for protection. There are about 2,000 scales covering this bone. Bands made of skin connect the parts of the carapace.
Cool. So it actually is kind of like chainmail on a knight. Okay, I think we're almost done. Is there anything else you want to tell us about?
There is an armadillo tail.
Ooh, excellent.
People in South America have a story about an armadillo who was musical. Armadillo loved music. He wished he could sing like the frogs and crickets. A musician told armadillo that his wish would come true, but armadillo would have to wait a long time. After armadillo lived a long and happy life, he died. The musician made his shell into a beautiful instrument. Armadillo sang at last.
Ooh, is there really an instrument made out of armadillo shell?
Probably, but I don't know what.
At this point, a little Google search comes in handy.
Yeah, there is one. It is called the charango. Do you think there's music of the charango somewhere? Let's see. Yeah, you ready? The charango. Which one would you rather listen to? The screaming of an armadillo or the charango?
Actually,
you are listening
like
to Is Sound a Language?
Annie Chen.
Thank you.
You are listening to Is Sound a Language?
My name is Logan Larson. Over winter break, I saw the revival of the musical Sunset Boulevard on Broadway. The movie turned musical, and subsequent revivals have a long history, both in their presentations and in the stars that took on the role of Norma Desmond. In case you aren't familiar, the 1950 film Sunset Boulevard centers around a down-and-out writer who stumbles upon the mansion of former silent film star Nora Desmond, who is plotting her revival on screen. She employs the writer to edit a screenplay she hopes will facilitate her big comeback, a depiction of the story of Salome, in which she will play the 16-year-old character. Desmond, a film star of the silent film era, couldn't break into the new medium at the advent of talking pictures. Jaded and haunted by her lost fame, the reality of her situation becomes too real as her obsession over the writer she employs turns deadly after her confession of love for him. Ending with one of the most iconic lines in film history, where Desmond slowly descends the stairs of her mansion and utters the line, "Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my close-up." My interest in Sunset Boulevard emerged after an encounter in the archives at the Harry Ransom Center in Austin, Texas. The Ransom Center holds the archival collection of Gloria Swanson, the actress who originated the role of Desmond in the original Billy Wilder film from 1950. The collection includes 620 boxes of archival materials, almost 292 linear feet of material, which include personal photographs, fan mail, scripts, and related materials from her health foods activism, among a litany of other items. The collection is whispered about by archivists and interns at the Ransom Center because of a notorious object included in the archive, a small, handmade coffin painted green that arrived